Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome back to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
Here we go, 2023. Upfront is back for a huge year in women's football, and what better way to kick it off this weekend than with Arsenal versus Chelsea, the Titans. We'll be previewing that game as Arsenal begin life without not only Miedemar, but also Jordan Nobbs. There have been a few big moves in the January transfer window already, so we'll discuss them, plus the stories we think you should look out for in 2023. First of all, welcome back, Football Beyond Borders and Dulwich Hamlet's Ceylon, Andy Hickman.
Hello.
Hiya.
Good to be back.
Welcome back to the booth.
Back to the Theatre of Dreams.
Oh, I do love that name. I really love that name.
It's nice to be back. Feels and also, I feel like I should start by saying, because of me being on this podcast, my mum and dad have started listening to the podcast.
Amazing, we've got new listeners.
But they've fallen in love with you two.
Oh my God, that's now 4 people. What the hell?
I mean, we love the Irish girl and Chloe.
Well, including my mum and dad.
They don't know my name. I'll take it. It's fine, at least they remember your name.
But they've started listening. They just listen to every episode now.
That's
their
really
WSL
cute.
Knowledge is growing.
Wow. Man. What are their names? We want to see what's
going on. Gail and Julian.
Gail and Julian, this one's for you. We dedicate this pod to you specifically.
That Irish girl says hi.
Yeah, 100%. And the other one says hi. That would be me.
No, they knew your name.
Knew your name.
They knew your name, just not mine.
Oh, they knew my name.
Well, I think they did know your name, but you know, they're just like, oh,
I also respond to that Irish girl, so it's fine.
Yeah. That's why I've been calling you to my friends, to be fair.
Oh.
Sozzles. Ceylon, what have you been up to? Christmas, New Year. I know you had a game cancelled. You ate an enormous amount of sourdough. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's always the way, isn't it? On a Saturday night, if you think you're playing on the Sunday, just the carb loading. And I decided to go a bit rogue this time. No pasta, no potato, no rice, just pure bread. So ate like a loaf of sourdough.
Don't you like cultivate it? Are you like cultivating a?
I've got a starter.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah. It's the millennials that we are, you know.
Any avocado on there?
Paprika? Prawns, anchovies, that sort of thing. And then Sunday turned up, got changed, did the team meeting, went outside, started warming up in the bands, and then over the tannoy, Sutton United went, this game is now called off.
Savage.
Whilst we're on the pitch. So then I thought, well, I'm going to have to burn this sourdough off, aren't I, somehow? So.
This is such millennial chat.
Isn't it?
It's good though that we feed ourselves because it's not like we can really afford anywhere to live. So we need to stay warm somehow.
God, this got awfully depressing very quickly.
Cost of living.
Yeah, 2023.
Energy crisis.
We've got to bring some revolutionary energy, agitational energy.
Okay, anything more positive from you over the new year and Christmas, Rach?
I went to Ireland and had a nice time.
Lovely. Yep. Family time.
Yeah.
Really appreciate that. And we went for our first little friendship tour down to Folkestone. It was really cute. Stayed in a lovely little place. We went on the beachfront, didn't we? For a nice little fish dinner.
We took our football friendship beyond borders to real life friendship. Yeah, so that was nice.
Yeah, we should do that again sometime.
Maybe, we'll see.
Well, you said you'd invite me back.
We're reviewing at the moment.
All right, tumbleweed moment. Okay, cool. Well, I'll be going down to Folkestone. So if you happen to be there, that'd be amazing.
Next podcast. Chloe turned
out with my Uncle Trev.
Yes. I'd love to hang out with your Uncle Trev. Trev's a DJ, just as a bit of context there. Over the years, I went to Gran Canaria with our old friend of the pod. She's very old now. She's backing into the 40s. Jenna Scalacci. We were sunning ourselves on the beach, which was bloody lovely. Nice little resort. The average age was about 75 to 80. It did get a little bit frisky at points, but
you're going to have to give context.
Not between me and Jenna. It was a very interesting hotel.
We need to turn to football quickly. This good is going for weirdly people downhill. Watching.
100%. Shall I move on very, very swiftly? Talking of great breaks and great content over the new year and Christmas, I mean, we've seen some amazing stuff coming out from some of the WSL lot, haven't we? I mean, Sam Kerr has been on flying form on Instagram, as has the Mrs. Mewis. Some very interesting shots of them two over Christmas. Have you seen them, guys?
Yeah, it's my favourite thing from over the break.
I feel like you should elaborate.
Yeah, I just love the casualness of which they just have a good time, don't they? Sam Kerr on a beach with a pint.
Like, lovely.
She's one of the best athletes in the world. One of the best women's footballers in the world. And she's there just unashamedly with a pint of lager. Then another thing, she's got a can in her hand. He's like, you live your life.
Do you know what? It makes me realise how pointless dry January is. So
That's what that showed you.
Yeah.
To me, I just think she was having a break from all the fashion advice that the missus has been giving out, you know, sitting around waiting for bags of clothes to arrive. I've absolutely loved it.
She wants a simple life, really, doesn't she? Just beach, a quokka and a lager.
What else could you want? Alicia Lehman has also been on the socials. She's living her absolute best life. She's now got 4 billion followers.
Is she
you
still
can quote
with,
that as a fact.
Half the population.
Is she still with her Villa boyfriend?
No. I think they're split.
Oh, they break up. When did they break up?
Yeah, let's move swiftly
this
on.
This is not what this podcast is about.
Maybe we should stick to the real football and not the gossip. Obviously we've had a big couple of weeks, haven't we? Big news coming out, big transfer window. I mean, we've got to talk about the first one, I think, for me, Jordan Nobbs leaving Arsenal after 12 years to join Aston Villa. Obviously, the longest serving member of the current first team squad. I mean, big transfer. In a letter to Arsenal on the website, she said, I've cried a lot over the past few days because I knew this was coming and now the reality of it all is really setting in. There's a saying that you shouldn't cry because it's over. You should smile because it happened. But I'm allowed to do both, right?
Oh
come on. That's got to pull at the old heartstrings.
It was coming. Four pages.
Yeah, but it was coming. And I think probably a lot of people were surprised she didn't go in the summer. Mm-hmm. And I think it's only fair that someone of her calibre is playing football and not on the bench. But yeah, she's an Arsenal legend. There is no doubt about that. And it's almost lovely when you see a player leave a club like that. I know the player didn't want to go. The fans didn't want her to go. But you know, it happens in players' careers where they have to think about, they have to put the football first, right? I know you're obviously in a really great environment, really great teammates, but at the end of the day, she needs to be getting game time. But it's so nice to know that she will always be loved and always be a club legend. And, you know, she's won so much with them. Arsenal through and through. You don't get many transfers. You don't see many transfers play out like that. And you just know that when Arsenal play Villa, pretty sure it's the last game of the season, potentially.
That's going to be tasty.
No, but there's going to be so much love for her when she comes back. And I just think that's so nice where a player's given so much to a club. And it's a brilliant signing for Villa. Absolutely brilliant.
As well, I just thought the letter was really tasteful and really beautiful. The way that, I don't know if she wrote it or her team wrote it or whatever. I imagine she probably put the pen to paper herself because it's such an emotional thing, isn't it? But I just, I really appreciated the raw emotion that was allowed to be surfaced in that situation, because it is like the ties are deep. Like in women's football, the squads are less transient and fluid, right? So some of those players, like, what is it, Beth Mead, 6 years. Katie McCabe, I think.
Kim Little. I know she's had a return, but she's been there a long time. Leah Williamson.
Leah Williamson's been at Arsenal since 2006 as a kid. Like, these players are so bonded. And that is your every day of the last however many years of your life. 13 years for Jordan Hobbs, was it?
12 years. Arsenal, yeah.
12 years at Arsenal with these same players. That's why it means so much. That's why you saw the, like, you know, flood of emotion. Imagine, like, in your own life, like your family or your colleagues or your friends, and suddenly you're upping and leaving that environment that you've been in for the last 12 years of your life with those people. It's quite a mad transition. And to just go into the training ground one day and be like, I've got to go now. I've got to say my goodbyes. See you on the last day of the season.
Oh, you'd be in bits. Absolutely,
like,
bits.
I feel a bit emotional.
It's not the same talking about it. But, you know, even being in a job, I know personally, there's jobs I've stayed in for the people and for the environment, and not because of the job, not because the job was serving me particularly well. And it's, you know, a similar situation on a much grander scale where she's probably stayed longer than she should have footballing-wise. Yeah. A lot to do with the people around her and the club around her, but she deserves to flourish.
Yeah, massively. I think, and like you touched on there, Rachel, I think, you know, sent last summer, I think that was probably the time that she was considering moving. But from some of her comments, it seems she was held back by Eidevall, who wasn't ready to let her go. But I think, you know, she has struggled with game time. And I think for me, it signifies quite a good move for her, you know, moving forwards, wanting to maybe prove herself. So obviously, we've got the World Cup coming on. She's going to want to impress Serena and get some game time in doing that. But, you know, it's a massive move for Villa. I mean, what do you guys think it's going to mean for them? Because they've been doing business this transfer window.
They are doing some serious business. It's a good example of what can happen if you give a manager a bit of time, right? Like, it wasn't, you know, sometimes the expectations on managers, I'm looking at you, Everton, you know, to just suddenly turn everything around within a season is a bit ridiculous. And Carla Ward has been given time. She's been given time to, like, think about what her team needs, who fits well, and is being allowed to kind of piece it together. And, you know, Daly, Jordan Hobbs, Staniforth has also just gone there. Yeah. Like, they are some solid signings with some really good experience, but they're also quality.
Mm-hmm. I've likened it to a slightly older team of Avengers. Like, that's what they're assembling.
Yes.
Like, they are assembling some, like, legends who are slightly, like, not in the top realms of, like, everyone knows who they are, or as in the outside world, not in women's football. Slightly, like, had their
fly
time
under the radar.
Yeah, fly under the radar, but have had these periods of just, like, consistent quality. And they're building this squad that you think, like, I'm rating it so much from Villa. I'm so excited to watch them play. I mean, we're going to get onto it in a minute, but I think it would have been more interesting if Beth England had gone to Villa. Imagine that as well.
My God.
Like, just start building that. Right, okay, they don't really want you to play you over there. They don't really want to play you over there, but we do. Come to us.
And then you
just
couldn't afford Beth England, evil genius.
I was going to say,
that's true.
I mean, that's probably the entire annual budget for Villa.
But you make a statement, right, through who you want to sign and go out there and sign. And Villa are making big statements.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Ward said she's appreciating it's a big signing for them. You know, she's a winner, bringing in experience, helping cement her place back in the international setup. So I think, yeah, Nobbs is going to be one to watch, especially with all the new partnerships that could be forming for them. So, yeah, let's wait and see. They'll be playing this weekend. It'll be interesting to see whether Nobbs is in the starting lineup. Another lioness deciding to leave one of the big guns, Beth England, moving over to Spurs for a record-breaking fee, £250,000, which is obviously huge. She's been at Chelsea since 2016, signed a 4-year deal for them back in 2020, but never really managed to have an extended run under Emma Hayes as her first choice striker. To me, I feels like a pretty bloody good move, considering Spurs are in the market for a decent, consistent striker, and Beth England's not been getting the kind of game time that she wants to. That feels like a really bloody good fit.
It's about time. I think a lot of us were thinking she was going to go somewhere either on loan or as a permanent transfer. Probably at the beginning of the season, definitely thought it was going to happen in the January window. You know, unfortunately, with the likes of Beth Mead picking up injuries, there's opportunity, sounds terrible, but there's opportunity there for players to kind of make their mark, and they need game time. But a bit like Nobbs, I know she loved Chelsea. She was Chelsea through and through. Chelsea loved her, and it's probably why she's been there for so long. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like there comes a time you have to put that career first, and she's won plenty of things now at Chelsea. And it's clearly about getting into that England squad and getting game time, but she's too good to be sat on the bench. So I've been hoping she'd get a transfer, and I'm hoping she goes on to kind of make a mark at Spurs.
I think it's a lot of pressure on her as well, though. I think it's a wonderful move for all parties, the clubs, Beth. I think she needed it, as Rach said, but I think it is a lot of pressure. They're a struggling team at the moment. They're coming on off a run of quite bad form pre-Christmas, and they're missing goals. And they've just signed it. You know, she's not going to be a silver bullet to all of their problems. Mm-hmm. But she might be expected to be from the outside world a little bit. Looking in, you're thinking, right, well, now you've got no excuses. You've got, you know, Ashley Neville can ping a ball in, Beth England can put it in the back of the net, she'll be in the box. And I think that's quite a lot of pressure to go in, but I'm hoping that, well, I think Beth England seems to be a player that she just really wants her opportunity, right? And when she's on, she will work so hard. And she's, you know, she's worked really, really hard in that Chelsea period to keep trying and knocking on the door. I remember the documentary they did behind the scenes at Chelsea, right? You get a sense for her of being like, I want my spot in that team. And now she will work hard for it in the Spurs team. But I think they've got a lot to sort out, and she's not going to be the answer to all of their issues. But I do also think if you sign a Beth England as a team, you think, well, now we've got someone who can score goals. It almost changes your mentality as you're playing, because you're thinking, well, even in the darkest of times when we're pinned back, if we just go route one, get the ball to her, she might do something. And I think they've been missing that.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'm not sure about how much pressure is on her, though. Like, obviously, she's a big, you know, signing, particularly financially, for the team. So there'll be eyes on that. But realistically, Spurs aren't going to make top four, top three.
Is that your bold prediction?
Well, yeah, it's that bold.
That's pretty obvious.
They're not going to make top three, and I'm fairly confident they're not going to get relegated. So actually, the pressure is probably coming from Beth herself, because she knows she needs to score goals to get Serena Wiegmann's eye, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like Spurs, there will be some pressure in terms of performance, but it's not like she's come in and like, now we have to get X because we've gotten you. And I know I have particularly the last, you know, year or so said Spurs need to get a good striker. But you do have to factor in that they are missing Rhea Percival, Kit Graham, Kaya Simon, Ellie Brazil. You know, the three of those are goal scorers. So there's also factoring that in, that they do have those players coming back as well. So I think Beth is also a long-term investment for them, obviously with the price she is. But when you've got the likes of those names back in with someone like her, they can actually start to push forward. And I think this season, maybe there's just less pressure on Beth to kind of get them to a certain point. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think I think it's picking up points against the teams around them. And that's where they were struggling so far this season, is picking up points where they should.
I think that's the thing. I think it's a perfect move, because Spurs are doing so badly. So the impact that she can have could be fairly instant. I mean, she's got 5 months to prove herself before, you know, we're looking at the World Cup and who the squad's going to be. And I think for her, like you said, the pressure is internal, because she's going to want to make an impact. She's been left on the bench for such a long period of time now that I think this is her chance to really go out there, express herself with a side that is really struggling. I mean, just looking at some of the stats on Spurs, you know, currently eighth, lost the last four games, only scored three goals since their 8-0 win over Brighton. So she does have it's all there. It's all there for her on a plate. So I think it'll be really interesting to see what she can do. I mean, like you said, they're not in the Champions League spot. They're a long way from cementing themselves really as a sort of mid-tabler type thing. But this season's been particularly disappointed. And, you know, this is a side that has come up at the same time as Man United. And you see where Man United are and where Spurs are, and the difference is stark.
You had to get that in, didn't you?
I did.
Did you know she likes Man United?
Yeah.
I had to throw them in somewhere. They're not even mentioned. We've not even mentioned them today.
You can mention them in that final bit, you know, about your bold predictions.
It's been 2 weeks since the last, three weeks even since the last podcast, and no one's given me a chance to say Man United. So
you've said it twice now, so
Man United. All right, the big one is back. Arsenal versus Chelsea, Sunday at 12 o'clock. It is going to be the game to watch this weekend. The sides are meeting for the first time this season, with the title race on a knife edge. But for Arsenal, this second half of the season is already looking like an uphill battle. It's their first league game since Vivian Miedema ruptured her ACL in the Champions League against Lyon in December. She's already announced that she'll miss the World Cup, which I don't think was much of a surprise given the length of the rehab period for these injuries. And she, of course, joins the missus, Beth Mead, on the sidelines. I mean, how do you think Arsenal are going to cope this season, and in this game in particular, without them both? It's two big losses.
I'm still in mourning. It's going to be tough. Like, I actually thought they looked really good against Zurich in the final UWCL game. where I thought they might struggle. I thought they might struggle kind of both from fatigue and mentally. And I think if it was Arsenal of last season, it would have been a very different game. So that is definitely like a boost. They're going to have Lena Hurtig back. They're going to have Kim Little back, which is massive. But Tim Stillman wrote a really good kind of mid-season review on Arsenal. And he spoke about like, when Arsenal were missing kind of Souza and Williamson in defence, they that kind of impacted a lot of their build-up play because they're often involved in those build-up plays. You know, you think those Leo Williamson balls pinged up forward. But what they're missing now are the key players that finish those opportunities. And last season, between Mead and Miedema, they were involved in 66% of Arsenal's goals.
Ooh. Not a lot then.
So that is going to be... That's, I think, an area that they might struggle with. And they haven't been scoring as many goals as last season. So that's an area I think Idavel needs to fill. It's a hole they need to fill. And, you know, obviously he's brought in some really good youngsters. I'm not sure whether they're going to be the immediate answer. But you've got your Hurtig, your Blacksenius and your Fords. Like, they're going to have to step up for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you've got experienced players there already, like you said, to fall back on and rely on. The depth of the Arsenal squad is amazing. And, you know, you touched on there the Arsenal signings. We've got Catherine Kuhl coming in from... And I hope I pronounce this correctly.
Oh, don't even try.
FC Nordsjælland. Jelland.
I was actually just listening to Tim Stillman's podcast about her and I'm not even going to try it.
Nordsjælland?
I don't know.
Why is she looking just like we know? Yeah. It's like blank faces.
I think her name's Katarina Kuhl.
Maybe I just refer to her as a 19-year-old midfielder. She's
cool.
Theresa.
Just call her Cool.
Cool.
That's the easiest bit to pronounce.
Cool. The 19-year-old midfielder spent three seasons at the Danish side, helped them lift the Danish Women's Cup and represented them at Euro 2020. So she's a bright spark.
The red cards, though.
Yep, actually, okay, right, forget the red card. I was actually going to say, I remember her standing out for me when I saw Denmark play a couple of times and I was like, who is the youngster? Like, I remember messaging Soph and being like, that number, what? Like, she's really good. So, yeah, she is definitely an exciting talent.
Well, Idavel is very, very excited about her. So she's one of the brightest talents in Europe, bringing creativity to the midfield, and he's very interested in developing her. Obviously, she's still very young, coming into a very experienced side, so it'd be interesting to see, maybe not this season, but seasons going forwards, what she's capable of.
She has been dubbed, like, the next best thing to Pernille Harder, like, as in to come out of Denmark. That's what I've seen on Twitter.
Wow. Yeah. Is this your big prediction for 2023?
It's not. No. We'll get onto that later.
All right, sweet. All right. You
I'm not predicting that, but someone from Denmark, I think, was saying that. So,
Your cards close to your chest. All right. Second big signing, Victoria Pelova from Ajax, Dutch national midfielder, competed in the Euros, bringing sort of strength in depth after Nobbs leaving and obviously Vivian being out injured. Idavel again, you know, really excited about this new signing, bringing dynamism. And energy into the midfield. So, you know, some big strengthening of the midfield there for them. But it'll be interesting to see who they're going to be starting in this big game. Let's put some flagpoles in the sand, shall we? What are we saying, Arsenal-Chelsea?
It's hard with Arsenal-Chelsea, isn't it? Because sometimes the occasion, you build up to it so much that you think, you know, this is the title-defining one. And I think it's always surprises, I think. There's obviously all the beef from last season with the first game of the season, the Arsenal-Chelsea, where Arsenal won 3-2, was it? And that Jonas Idavel picture.
He was allowed to celebrate, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that picture. And then
hate
recreating.
Passionate managers.
The Cuthbert and Millie Bright recreation of that. You know, it's all lingering. Really don't want to predict this, but I can't see this current Arsenal team winning. I think Chelsea will find ways to win. And I think it will be 2-1.
2-1.
Or even 1-0, Chelsea.
All right. There you are.
Sorry, I've
literally just taken that out of my mouth. I was going to say, yeah, potentially 1-0, Chelsea. I think Chelsea are better at exploiting teams' weaknesses. Mm. And at the moment, I feel like Arsenal have a bit of a weakness, have a bit of a chink in their armour that I think Chelsea can exploit. I think we might be surprised at how Arsenal come out. I think we're all kind of maybe expecting them to really struggle, and we might be surprised. God, when you think back to the beginning of last season and they played Birmingham bottom of the table as their first match back in January and lost, and now they're playing Chelsea top of the table as their first match back. As you say, really hard to call, but I'm going to say Chelsea edge it.
I've got to agree. I've got to agree. I think it's going to be a tight game, but I think it's going to be 2-0 Chelsea. I think they just look too strong, and I think Arsenal... suffering the injuries, seeing Nobbs go, I think is a bit of a shaky start to 2023. And Chelsea have been in flying form. I mean, finished just before the winter break with a 3-0 win over PSG. Emma Hayes calling it her favourite performance of the season. I mean, both sides have had very strong performances in the Champions League this year, which has been amazing. But yeah, I mean, Chelsea's much improved performances in Europe this season. I think that's a big one for me, confidence-wise.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't think they've played their best football. I think I've seen them play better football. Mm-hmm. But I think in Europe, it shows a real maturity that when they're winning, when they've not always played well, and the experience in the group stages over the last couple of years, it feels like they're less rushed or stressed when goals aren't going in or when they're not winning games that where they're on top or where they're dominating. And I think in previous seasons, we've seen them try and force it because in the group stages, you know you kind of have to keep winning if you want to get out of the group. And I think that pressure has gotten to them. And we've seen it a little bit in performances in Europe where they get stressed when they're not scoring. And then I'll always remember that 3-3 game. I can't remember if it was Wolfsburg maybe. And you could just see that, you know, dominating it, weren't scoring the goals, capitulated and conceded, and then managed to get it back. And I think they're calmer in that respect when things aren't going their way. And I think that's come with maturity and experience.
And if you're just comparing the two sides very, very bluntly from their forward lines, like Kirby, Guru Wrighton, Sam Kerr, Lauren James, like, it's pretty terrifying compared to
Erin Cuthbert from outside the box.
Erin Cuthbert, Jesse Fleming, like compared to what is Arsenal's front line going to be?
Blackstenius, Ford, and
Ford,
McCabe.
Yeah. Kate McCabe.
Frieda Manham in behind.
Yeah, it's just the lethalness of Chelsea that is the thing that they've got goals. You look at that front line and you think, well, they're going to score.
And they've got
goals.
Consistency. Yeah. They play together that way all the time, whereas Arsenal are probably kind of moving chess pieces a little bit.
If Arsenal do it, it's going to be like a proper gritty, dig your heels in, snatch a goal, and then we will like firm up and win this. I can't see it being like this full-flowing, fluid game where Arsenal create loads of chances.
They'll win 3-0 on
Arsenal. I hope they do. I really hope they do because, I don't know, I'm quite up for a season of Arsenal taking it back and also the Arsenal men winning it in the same year. I think that could be quite sick to have. We've never seen that before, have we? No, we probably have actually.
Probably.
Before my time. Is it Arsenal women and Arsenal men winning the league at the same time? I don't remember when Arsenal won the Premier League. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, I agree. And I think just touching back, I know we sort of briefly mentioned there sort of the loss of Vivian Miedema as being one of their sort of chinks in their armour going forwards into this season. And I think, you know, we keep touching on injuries as being, you know, such a massive endemic in the WSL. I love that word. But it has been, a demanding few years for the schedule. I mean, last year, obviously, we had the Euros. Now we've got the Women's World Cup coming on. Next year, we've got the Olympics. And then the Euros all over again. Plus, obviously, you know, the players are playing out the WSL fixtures, the Champions League, the FA Cup, the Connie Cup fixtures, the Arnold Clark Cup. There's a lot going on.
Nations League is coming.
The Nations League. We've got new cups starting. It's a lot. And I think the pressure on the players to perform, you know, particularly I think there was a really great article from Katie White in The Athletic sort of talking about some of the game time that some of the players are having in particular. You know, Millie Bright, I think, is on about 1 billion minutes this season.
I love that when you just don't know what the actual number is, you just say a billion.
Yeah. It's just
who's got 6 billion Instagram followers?
That's the thing that the upfront listeners know they can come to us for some hard, clear, cold facts.
It's anywhere between 500 and 6 billion.
It is mental that Millie Bright's had 1 billion minutes. Like, wow, what a woman.
But I do think, obviously, you know, a part of that, you know, we've seen so many, you know, horrible injuries taking place. Beth Mead, Vivian Miedema, Alexia Putellas, not to name 1,000 that have happened.
Have you got the list?
Actually, no, that is
1,002.
The number.
It could be 998.
It's something like 57
sure.
ACL injuries across the major top six leagues in like, you know, NWSL, French League, German League.
57 this
57,
season?
57, I think, is the number I saw in 2022.
Okay, wow.
Thank God for bringing some realism to those figures. I
just
really appreciate
to hit you in the gut right there with that.
It's close to 1,000.
Yeah.
It is, just add 950 and you're pretty much there. But I mean, a lot of the factors at play there, sort of, you know, biology, the shallow squads, not enough data, especially around sort of women's health, ill-fitting boots, poor pitches, just to name a few.
It is worth at some point where we talk about the other end of the scale where you've got clubs and teams that just aren't playing enough football. There's like a massive disparity in the league. But when you think about the fact that we already had a Euros missing Piteous and Katoto, now we've got Mead and Miedema, probably going to miss the World Cup, and God knows who else as you know, there's so many injuries now at this rate. I know, you know, Jess Yu from Ireland has done her ACL. She's probably not going to make the World Cup potentially. But it just feels like players are just expected to kind of ride out the next couple of years until I think 2026, when we actually have a summer with no major tournament, which just seems like that's absolutely insane. They're being treated like commodities, I think. They're being treated as like, just go out there and do this thing that we want you to do, like, rather than really thinking about the fact that they are people at the end of the day. And ultimately, their bodies are their tool to do their job. And there's enough money in the game to be funding research and providing the right facilities, opportunities, equipment to ensure that clubs and national sides are able to provide players with everything they need to be at the best of, you know, to give their body a fighting chance, essentially. But yeah, I just, at the moment, I think that's how we should be showing our commitment to the game, how UEFA and FIFA should be showing their commitment is not, you know, look, we have a new tournament or we're going to add eight more teams to this major tournament. It should be doing the and maybe they are, but they're not talking about it. It should be doing the work behind the scenes to ensure longevity in the game for players' careers, not just about a tournament that's going to make more money. Like, yeah, okay, putting research into things may not be making you money straight away, but it is going to, you know, extend the careers of top players and ensure that players are able to continue playing longer. And, you know, we've got top quality football. And I just think we need to be an awful lot more proactive about things. I think because the game is so young, we're still so reactive to stuff that happens in the game, and there's no reason for that. We should. There's enough money to be proactive and to be trying to stop things from happening rather than reacting to when they do.
Mm. Yeah, it's about the provision of medical services and the access and the speed of which you can access things, right? I don't know what it was like for you playing and being in the Spurs setup, or, you know, how easy was it for you if someone got an injury? How quickly would you be going for that scan, getting the diagnosis, getting the rehab? Like, often, you know, when you don't have the resources, my assumption is actually that you don't, that process takes so long for teams that don't maybe have, you know, the budgets of like Arsenal or Chelsea. And even there, you know, I don't know what's going on there, but.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it was a difficult time, I think, because it was such a transitional period when I was with Spurs. I mean, we were going from Championship into the WSL, and there was a load of things that were still sort of being worked out behind the scenes, the medical insurance, and weirdly, I mean, it was quite good in a way that, you know, as part of our contracts, we did have to have medical insurance up to a certain limit. But then once that budget was exhausted, then that you'd have to wait until the next season, or you'd have to make a special case to the main club for some provisions. And I think it's the case now still with a couple of Championship teams. And I don't really know what the situation is with the WSL teams, but they do have a set limit on how much that budget is for how much they can use. So if you've got one ACL injury, when you think about that surgery in itself is about, I think it's anywhere between about £8,000 or £12,000. That is, it's not £1 billion. So I've come down slightly on my facts. But yeah, it's about £8,000-£12,000 for an ACL injury, plus all the scans that you had before that, plus all the preoperative assessments, and then also the rehab and the resources that that takes up and checking in with the player. So you only need a couple of those sometimes in a squad, as well as, you know, the other stuff, concussions, that kind of thing. And already your annual budget for medical insurance is eaten up. So that's one thing that I think clubs maybe do need to work on. And sometimes, I mean, back in the day, this is a fair few years ago, they'd just say, oh, just go to the A&E. You're better off. It'd be quicker for you to just go down to A&E and get things sorted out rather than making use of the private budget, because we don't know when that the next private assessment is, which is always a bit weird.
This is when we talk about equality, right? Mm. This is what we're talking about. And it's also equity between clubs, right? It shouldn't be that if you play for this club that's first or second in the table, you're going to recover from an ACL injury far better than someone who's in eighth and ninth. Mm-hmm. There should be an equitable access to medical care, I think, across the leagues. And that's where investment should come as well. Mm-hmm. It's not just obviously wages, but we're not asking for women's players to be paid the same as men. It's about like equity and access to treatment. And that's the bit that kind of frustrates me the most, that we don't have that level of access and that it's all reactive. And if, as many people said, if you had like Mbappe, Messi, Ronaldo, like all of them with ACL injuries in the men's game, they'd be throwing money at the problem.
It is exactly the sort of the thing that isn't spoken about, because it's not glamorous in terms of, we talk about the growth of the women's game, increased investment, commercialization, people on the Jonathan Ross show, like, cool, that's great. But it means nothing unless that is invested in the resources where it's most needed. I mean, there's going to be a new chief exec of the WSL soon to be announced. I meant the recruitment was like before Christmas. Like, they were looking for someone with commercial expertise, right? If I was chief exec of the WSL tomorrow, create, as Rachel said, a central pool that is a medical budget, access, whatever, where clubs can draw down. You know, even if you're a Leicester at the bottom of the league and you're really struggling and your gate's not good enough and your sponsorship's not good, whatever, your budgets are smaller, that should not prevent you from your centre forward doing your ACL and being able to get the same treatment that Vivian Miedema might be able to get, because otherwise the gap will just grow like immeasurably, and then we'll just be in the same position as the men's game, but worse, because the medical services aren't, you know, there's not like a base level, it seems, in the women's game like there is if you're a men's Premier League club or championship club.
And we talk about being more proactive rather than reactive, and it's something that talked to Emma Ross said on our ACL podcast, which you should go back and listen to, about how a lot of the time they're having to react to an injury. So that idea of researching ACL injuries and trying to figure out why it's happening or how it's happening or what's caused it is often quite difficult, because players are being asked about it after they do it. You know, and you've got some clubs now who have enough money to be able to track, you know, we see Chelsea doing it, tracking periods, everything, you know, every percent is being tracked so that you can get the best out of your athletes, which is great, but not every club can do that. And that's an area that needs looking at, because if we're tracking everything, we will learn so much more about injuries and when they do happen, because we're not, like she said, going back and saying, well, what day were you in your cycle, or how did you sleep the night before? You know, this was 2 weeks ago. Can you remember, like, did you sleep well, or what did you eat, or were you hungry? Like, stuff like that. And that kind of stuff being tracked across clubs rather than just at the ones who can afford it. Again, that's about like equity.
But I think that is definitely improving. I think even at championship level, the majority of the championship clubs will be wearing the GPS on the back. And I know even with, you know, I can only speak about my experiences really with Palace and obviously with Spurs, but that kind of data was tracked, so that, but it was a very short term thing. It was like, okay, well, this player has played X amount of minutes in the last month, so therefore for this month, we're going to shorten it down or whatever. But what we don't have, I suppose, because the GPS trackers have only started to be used sort of in the last couple of years or so, especially for, well, Arsenal and Chelsea have probably been using it for quite a while, but because you don't have that long term data yet,
base level,
it's very difficult to kind of, and because then those players then move on to other clubs because the contracts are so short, you don't actually get a consistent set of long-term data which you can work from and kind of establish patterns from. So I think that's also an issue. And then you're also working with, you know, other external variables, the pitches, the you know, the international fixtures, the, you know, the menstrual cycle. So it's a massive problem. It's a data collecting massive problem. And I think it's also interesting, just from a legal perspective, sort of pushing this forward into slightly something GDPR. A little bit different, is GDPR, 100% GDPR, because a lot of times that, you know, the clubs are collecting this data, they're not actually getting the proper authorities from players about what data they can collect and also where that data is being used. And I think you don't have to look at kind of the men's game, and there was that big hoo-ha in the Men's World Cup about, you know, can we use the data of, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo's heartbeat when he's taking a penalty? But those kind of bits of data are now being used as a commercial, they're a commodity. So I think that kind of data also has the potential now to be sold to companies or sold to, you know, the rights of that data. We need to start looking at expanding the WSL and Championship contracts to include provisions that include how that data is being used, what information you're giving to players about that data, and whether you can actually use that data to be sold elsewhere for private companies to be investing in the support that some of these clubs might need.
Do we need that central?
Just throwing that,
do we need the central kind of
budget?
Central budget for all this stuff, a central hub of for health, I suppose. Where,
data and health.
But that data, that player tracking is all in one centralised place where when players move club, I just, you know, there needs to be some level of, you know, long-term research, that it's not just a here and now situation.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, well, moving on to a slightly more positive note. Looking ahead to 2023, I've heard it's going to be a big one for women's football. Right, we're going to ask a few questions now. So you're going to have to do some soul searching, guys, and look deep within yourselves to find, first question, what's the one story you're looking forward to in 2023?
I know I'm supposed to pick like probably something small, small, but I can't. The whole World Cup, all of it. I'm so excited about it. I've been doing a lot of planning over the Christmas and early January, and it's just going to be such an adventure. There's something different about covering a tournament the other side of the world. We did it with Canada. Mm-hmm. You're out there for the whole thing. There's no kind of popping back like we did in France, or, you know, feeling like we could drive there like we did at the Euros in the Netherlands, you know. So it's that adventure that I'm really excited about. And obviously the fact that I can also see Ireland as well as England at a major tournament just doubles the excitement. So we'll be going out there a few weeks before it starts to do a little bit of traveling. But that is the, you know, the biggest thing about 2023. Like, you'd think you can't top 2022, but I think 2023 is going to come close.
Again, I think it's got to be the Women's World Cup this year. I mean, I'm going out there with my mum to do some traveling a little bit in New Zealand beforehand, which would be really cute. It's the first time I've ever been out there, so it'd be a great opportunity to obviously like go and see the beauty of both of those countries. And I think it's just going to be incredible having the whole of the women's football community out in one place. And in my head, I thought it was going to be like shorts and t-shirts weather, but I've since been told to pack a rain jacket. But I just think to have that kind of, you know, so soon after the Euros, and there was such a buzz around England and what they're going to be achieving. And, you know, they're obviously one of the favourites in going into the tournament. So for me, I think, yeah, it's going to be, I mean, it's
up front, down under.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. I think we do our final episode on the steps of the Sydney Opera House.
Do the whole thing.
Oh
in
my
existence.
God. That would be gold.
Yeah.
I'm going to sound like Julia Gillard for like a whole month.
And then can you imagine?
It's going to be amazing.
We managed to get like Serena coming in drunk at the end of the tour. She just like sits on the steps of the, and we just do a massive podcast.
Yeah, probably not going to happen. But maybe we can find Rachel Brown-Finnis again.
Yeah.
I'm saying, yes,
she'll be out there.
I've got the Opera House in view. That's
it.
The
that's
image.
What you're seeing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hopefully Charlie and Finn are
I have no idea of the geography of Sydney. Where is the stadium?
No. I've heard that all the cities are about 20 minutes apart, so it should be easy.
Yeah, it's easy. You can drive it.
Yeah.
Going to do the fan van again.
All right, Ceylon, let's cut to you then.
She's been typing because we've bigged her up so much. She's been putting in
this
some beautiful
intense,
words.
Right,
here
I've
we
got
go.
Two.
Four paragraphs
I've got two.
Of this. Go
I've
on.
Got a meaningful one, and then I'm going to...
She's done the meaningful one because we've bigged her up so much. Go on.
Yeah, exactly. That.
Make us cry.
The pressure. I would love to get a young person to the World Cup in Australia. And I think that sounds a bit ambitious. Got to go through all the safeguarding stuff. But imagine a girl from London, Manchester, Birmingham, wherever, you know, we work, who fell in love with football during the Euros and like had that really powerful transformational experience of watching this Lionesses team and feeling really connected to them. Like, it is a big consideration that the World Cup is on the other side of the world. Kickoffs are 7, 8 a.m. in the morning. Like, it's more inaccessible for a young person to watch. Imagine doing that and just them following the Lionesses and being able to continue that passion at a really formative age as a teenager and have an opportunity they would never have. So any potential sponsors, brands, anyone who wants to sort of pay for that and help me get a young person to the World Cup, that would be really appreciated.
Always rely on Ceylon to make us feel like absolute dicks. And she makes her point.
I was just like,
why did we pick ours?
It'd be nice just to see the country.
Ours is terrible.
Yeah. And then
I'm going on holiday. Yeah. Woohoo. Yeah.
I'm also going on holiday. That is also
I mean, I am
true.
Working.
But
it,
if I
but
bring a young person, then I will have to work, you know. But that would be a lovely responsibility to have.
That sounds beautiful. That's and I just feel like an asshole.
Bloody stunning.
Can I say my other one then?
Yeah
go on. It needs to be. It needs to be like,
one
yeah.
story I'm looking forward to in 2022, Lauren James's come up. Her starting 11 for England.
Delete that out of my
point. Smashing the World Cup and just becoming the player.
The icon.
She, you know, she deserves to be. Lauren James, this year.
All right.
Do you know what? That was her point. But because we bigged her up so much, she went and typed up that beautiful piece beforehand.
It was, wasn't it?
That's our own fault.
Yeah. So we did that.
You know me too well.
All right. One player listeners should watch out for.
Well, I can't say Lauren James.
Lauren James.
Well, you can't.
Mine's
no.
Lauren James.
Right.
What? No, I'm joking. It is Lauren James, but it also Vicky Lopez.
Vicky Lopez?
Yeah.
Okay, why?
17-year-old Barcelona. Read somewhere. Don't know if this is true. 60 goals in 17 matches.
Sorry?
Yeah. I saw that on an account, a popular women's football account.
That sounds like something Chloe would say.
That does.
60 goals in 17 matches.
A billion goals.
That's on a popular women's football account. Won't name it, but that's what they said. But under 17 Women's World Cup player of the tournament, Spanish international, made a debut for Barcelona in the Champions League. Attacker, looks like she's going to be just pure fire. So Vicky Lopez and Lauren James.
All right. Rach, what are we saying?
Bloody hell. Well, I did have Lauren James down. I won't rehash that. I'm very sad that Jess Yu from Ireland is injured. I'm not sure if she'll make the World Cup, but she would have been one, I'd say, to look out for. Arsenal's youngsters, very exciting, the ones that they've signed. But I am pulling for Jordan Nobbs. If she makes the World Cup, she's one of the unluckiest players in terms of major tournaments and injuries. And I am hoping that she has her Alexandra Popp moment at this World Cup.
What, misses the final?
No, Alexandra Popp had such bad luck when it came to major tournaments. And she was tied with Beth Mead for Golden Boot. And yes, I know she missed the final, but she had a bloody unbelievable tournament. Everything she touched went in the goal. So I'm pulling for Jordan Nobbs to hopefully make the England squad and have her Popp moment where she storms the World Cup.
That's a sick one.
Yeah,
I like
that's pretty good. Listeners who obviously are into women's football anyway should probably know that Guru Ryerson, for me, I think she's already one to watch. She's been one to watch this entire season, but I feel like this season she's really come into her own. And I think the deliveries that this kid is delivering, and she seems to get better with every single game. And I think this year is really going to be her sort of coming of age moment.
She's quite understated, isn't she? Mm.
Yeah, she subtly goes about her business, but she does her business so bloody well.
And she's like a silent assassin.
She's
so smiley, lovely. Hi.
Bang.
I'm going to ruin you.
What did I say? Smiler. More crosses than a church, that woman. Like,
more
constantly.
Crosses than a church.
Whoa, that is killer.
Left and right. Like, seriously, her assists are ridiculous.
She's unreal.
It's just those whipped in balls. They're a goalkeeper's nightmare. But yeah, she's my one to watch for this season because I think she's been absolutely outstanding. I can only see her going from strength to strength with every bloody game. So it'll be interesting to see her actually this weekend. All right. One bold prediction you see coming true this year. Rach.
Man United will win a piece of silverware. There you go. Whether it's the Conti Cup or the FA Cup. I don't know. But
she's lost her head.
Yeah, I know.
Come on!
I'm doing that for Chloe. And also potentially someone else other than Leon or Barca to win the UWCL.
Mm.
Might we see it go somewhere in Germany?
Okay.
Oh, if Georgia.
Or come home.
I mean, I know it's bold, but that's what the question said. So I made them bold.
All right.
I like it.
Salon, what are we saying?
Lauren James.
Oh my God.
Did you like cheat and just write her name down under every answer under every question?
Lauren James will win
everything.
PFA or Ballon d'Or.
Ballon d'Or.
You said be bold.
Yeah, but not reckless.
I want to be bold. I once actually said in men's football, Naby Keita would win PFA Player of the Year, and that's never ever come true.
Lauren James
will be the PFA Young Player of the Year.
Oh. Ballon d'Or
or Player of the Year.
Yeah, Young Player of the Year. Sure. That's not that bold.
Yeah, so it could still come true. Or Ballon d'Or. Nominee. Should we say nominee for Ballon d'Or?
That's madness.
Oh yeah, it's completely
I'd
mental.
I'd question the validity of the... Even if she has a stellar season, I'd question the validity of the Ballon d'Or if Lauren James is being nominated.
But
You haven't seen the rest of her season yet.
Half of her season. She is going to be on smoke. I was watching compilation videos of her last night, just like flip-flapping. Just like she puts teams to bed.
But
like,
I still think you need to have some credibility of being a couple of consistent seasons of achieving...
Sorry, have you seen the Ballon d'Or nominees before in the past?
It's always been bold. Brilliant. I've been bold.
Yeah. Chloe,
right?
It said be bold.
Sorry.
Back off.
Sorry, I
what's
don't
your
know.
Bold prediction?
Come on, it's going to be Man United, isn't it?
Oh my
Man
God.
Man United win the WSL. It's actually not going to happen. Man United aren't going to win the WSL, but you can say it because it's bold.
Weirdly enough, it does involve Man United.
Oh my God.
I've lost it. I've absolutely lost it. I've not had breakfast this morning. I've only had water. I've absolutely lost it. Man United making it to the Champions League spot. I didn't
go
WSL.
Not what? That
That's
bold.
Not bold.
And
that's highly likely.
You didn't let me finish.
And
you jumped in there.
Leah Galton wins the Ballon d'Or.
Mary Earps for the Ballon d'Or. No, that should also be one. But also, England winning the Women's World
That's
Cup.
That's not bold. That's going to happen.
She doesn't understand the question, I don't think.
I mean, you've got to go for something slightly outrageous that if it came true, you would look so good.
No, bold.
And it's like Farrah Williams doing the 4-0 in the semi-final.
Didn't you at the top of the show say that England were one of the favourites?
Yeah.
For the World Cup.
Yeah, but it's
so it's not bold to say
that. Well, they've still got to win an entire tournament in Australia and New Zealand. You know, the time difference.
But Rachel basically said, Bayern Munich or Wolfsburg are winning the Champions League. That's bold.
Thank you.
I don't think that's as bold as mine.
What, England win the World Cup after being the best team in Europe and beating the current World Cup holders in September?
Don't come at me just because you said Lauren James for the Ballon d'Or. I just think that's just...
Lauren James for Ballon d'Or. You heard it here first, guys. I'm going to look really smart in... when's the Ballon d'Or?
Thing is, she's going to brag if she gets her bold statements right, even though they weren't that bold.
Yeah, 100%. Last podcast.
You won't be in the studio and I'll have to deal with this.
Yeah. Man United for Champions
We'll bring
League.
You back
That's
in.
What's going to happen?
We will bring you back. I know what I've said is mind-blowing. It's like, geez, mic drop type vibes, but...
I'm not talking to you in Australia on the cup final day.
Why?
When England win it.
Why? Why would you not?
Because... You're
it has to be
enough.
A prediction, doesn't it? Something that you think could come true.
It didn't
true.
Say prediction, it said bold prediction.
All right, now we've wasted 20 minutes discussing what bold means.
You really
means.
Love and exaggerate. It's been about 5.
I want to know in the comments, people, let us know on Twitter.
What your thoughts are on the word
How
bold.
How bold is what is yeah. what Chloe's prediction
Who's
is.
Been the boldest? Let's play that competition.
All right, well, that's a question for the listeners. Thank you so much for joining us today on Upfront. We hope you're as hyped for a bold 2023 as we are. In the meantime, let us know how bold you think we've been. Tweet us at Football Ramble. I am at Morgie_89. Rach is at Girls on the Ball. And Ceylon is at Ceylon Andy with an I, not a Y. We will see you next Tuesday.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.